This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Nobody likes breathing wildfire smoke, and you don't need to be near the woods. Now, with extreme conditions during climate change, smoke travels around the Northern Hemisphere, and lots in Australia too. New research shows repeated exposure to wildfire smoke increases the odds of a dementia diagnosis by 18%. It is many times worse than smog particles from cars and industry. Protect your brain. Let's find out more from a co-author of a new study, Wildfire Smoke Exposure and Incident Dementia in Southern California, 2008 to 2019. Dr. Joan Casey is an environmental epidemiologist and associate professor at the University of Washington. From the West Coast, Joan Casey, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks for having me.
According to CAL FIRE, the 2024 wildfires in California burned more acres than in the previous 2 years combined, a terrible year. So Californians are getting smacked hard with smoke. But how can breathing wildfire smoke lead to dementia?
Gases and also particles, and the most important, PM2.5. And when those get deep into the lungs, they can actually pass into the bloodstream, and then throughout the body they cause problems like inflammation, oxidative stress, they can damage your DNA. And downstream that can lead to health problems, including eventually dementia.
And what is dementia, just in case somebody missed it?
Sure. So dementia is this umbrella term for a set of neurological conditions. So people are probably familiar with things like Alzheimer's disease, and that's one type of dementia. There are other types, things like frontotemporal dementia or vascular dementia. And each of these kinds of dementia, the thing that kind of links them together is they result in loss of cognitive function and people having trouble living their daily lives. And the thing that I think about that's such a big problem with these conditions is one, they're extremely disruptive and really reduce quality of life. And two, we don't have great treatments for dementia. And so working hard to understand risk factors and what we can do to prevent dementia from occurring in the first place is really important.
Well, maybe increasing dementia is from smoking tobacco or even repeated COVID infections. How can public health specialists be sure wildfire smoke is involved in a brain condition that shows up years later?
We can't be sure. This is kind of the first major study, but we are looking at 1.2 million people age 60 and older. And because wildfire smoke is a little bit different from some other exposures, it's kind of random the way it occurs. People aren't really selecting where they live based on wildfire smoke, and it's hard to predict where wildfire smoke will hit next. And so it's completely true that many factors lead to people developing dementia, including genetic risk factors. But given the size of this study and the strength of the relationships we're seeing here and the biologic plausibility, I think, you know, we may be on to an important risk factor for dementia.
And the numbers don't lie. I mean, you've ran through a bunch of things and here came up with some results that seem to show a connection, don't they?
That's what we think. And we are controlling for some of those other factors that might put people at elevated risk of dementia, their backgrounds, the type of neighborhood they live in. And we're really trying to isolate the impact of their long-term exposure to wildfire smoke. But of course, as always, it won't be a perfect study. But what we do see here is over a three-year period, because we're interested in looking at kind of this cumulative, repetitive exposure to wildfire smoke that more and more people are now experiencing, that over a three-year period, a 1 microgram per meter cubed increase in average wildfire PM2.5 exposure resulted in an 18% increase in the odds of developing dementia, which is a fairly substantial increase in odds. And when we compare that to what we see for PM2.5 from other sources, things like industrial activity or traffic, we only see a 1% increase in the odds of developing dementia. So we do see, one, an overall relationship for both types of fine particulate matter, but two, a much stronger relationship with wildfire PM2.5.
As with vehicle exhaust, the health threat comes from tiny particles we cannot see. They are about 30 times smaller than the diameter of a human hair. Why are these invisible aerosols so dangerous for humans?
We're learning more and more about that as time goes on. It's interesting because every year that passes, I think we see more disease conditions linked to the quality of our air, and we're increasingly realizing how critical it is in the way that we've done a really good job of cleaning up drinking water in the U.S. by and large. We're now more and more realizing the air that we breathe, because we breathe all day long, every day, while we're awake and asleep, is super important. And so when you're inhaling these particles, they're causing all sorts of downstream effects in the body that can lead to health problems. And the thing that's unique or interesting about wildfire PM2.5 is it has a higher proportion of it is made up of ultrafine particles, which are 25 times smaller than PM2.5 itself. And so those teeny tiny particles can actually move directly from the nose into the brain, potentially damaging cells there that could lead to dementia or other neurological conditions.
Yeah, when I lived in Los Angeles in the early 1970s, the famous hills often disappeared behind a brown smog, and then came clean air regulations and cleaner air. Is it fair to say now wildfire smog has become the bigger threat in California, even for city dwellers?
Oh, absolutely. On days where it's polluted in California, on average, about 70% of that pollution is from wildfire smoke. So on days where it's really bad out, it's usually wildfire smoke that's the culprit. And we've seen on the west coast of the United States, after the Clean Air Act passed in 1970, we had huge improvements in air quality. And year after year, we would see improvements. And in the last decade or so, those trends have fully reversed in the western U.S., where air quality is actually getting worse now on average for PM2.5. And that's fully driven by increases in wildfire smoke exposure.
Joan Casey, what is in wildfire smoke that makes it so toxic to us?
Wildfire smoke is this heterogeneous substance, so it has gases and particles. In our study, we're focusing in on those PM2.5 particles, but other things are in there. So we have volatile organic compounds, VOCs, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, PAHs. We also have nitrogen oxides, which we know in the presence of sunlight react and create ozone, which is also helpful. I suspect that a bit of what we're picking up on here in our overall relationship with wildfire PM2.5 is driven by the other components of wildfire smoke that co-occur.
Well, we do have protective filters built into our bodies called the blood-brain barrier. Can these PM2.5 particles from fire smoke get past that directly into our brains?
We think not. We think the blood-brain barrier does a pretty good job with that. But these ultrafine particles may be able to slip through and cause direct damage to brain cells. And so it's kind of a subpart of PM2.5, the even tinier particles that are within that may be an additional problem. But the other thing I would say is we don't actually know that it's the particles directly impacting the brain itself that's the problem. We know that for many types of dementia, cardiovascular diseases are precursors to dementia development. And so it might actually be a different pathway through worsening cardiovascular disease in people tied to wildfire smoke exposure that down the road increases their risk of developing dementia. So my guess is it's several pathways, as it is usually the answer, that are at play here.
Your study looked at smoke and dementia. What about other neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's?
You're asking the question that the first author on this study, Dr. Holly Elser, who is a neurologist, has been poking at me. she is super interested in looking at that question because that is her hypothesis. We probably would see a similar relationship with other neurological conditions. We didn't look at that here, and to my knowledge, no one has looked at other conditions like Parkinson's in relationship to long-term wildfire smoke exposure. But it's likely some of these pathways are similar, and so definitely would be a good next step.
Well, suppose I'm vacationing at Disneyland in Southern California, and with bad luck, that week is filled with heavy wildfire smoke. Is a single exposure enough to make dementia more likely later on in life? Do we know the minimum dose for a wild smoke to trigger brain damage?
Short answer is we definitely don't know the answer to that question yet. The other thing I'd bring up is in our study, we're only looking at older adults. So we're looking at people 60 and older. So whether or not these findings translate to an earlier period in the life course, I think is an open question. What I can say is in this study, we looked at this three-year average exposure to a main exposure of interest. So living your life for three full years, what's the average amount of wildfire PM 2.5 you're experiencing? But we also looked at some other metrics because you're spot on. The way people are exposed to wildfire smoke is not really over this three-year period. The dosing comes usually in bursts where there'll be a few days or a week with really high levels of wildfire PM 2.5. And so we did in this work also try to use some metrics that captured those peak exposures. So we looked at the relationship between smoke waves and people developing dementia, smoke waves being two or more days where wildfire PM 2.5 exceeded 15 micrograms per meter cubed, so quite high levels. And we also looked at the peak exposure during the worst week during that three-year period. With those metrics, we did see, again, increases in the odds of developing dementia. And when we looked overall at kind of the total number of days where there was any wildfire smoke, so kind of capturing low-level exposure, we didn't really see a relationship there. So this kind of indicates that it might be those peak exposures that matter a lot. But back to your Disneyland trip, I would say it's a balance because the causes of dementia are multi-pronged, and things like spending time with family, social interaction is very important for preventing dementia. So it's always a balance. It's not an obvious answer. I would certainly say if you have a KN95 or N95, the face masks that folks were wearing during the height of the COVID pandemic laying around, I would recommend wearing one of those on your Disneyland trip. That would help. That can really filter out a lot of those particles that you'd otherwise be breathing in.
And this study determines that dementia from wildfire smoke increases for people over 75 years of age. Should the elderly mask up more or take protective cover, or does that matter if it takes decades of exposure to add dementia risk?
I think anyone 60 and older should take days that are smoky seriously from this study. And what I would say is folks can check the air quality index where they're living and try to understand if it's a bad air quality day. In the way that we now wake up and we check the weather on our smartphone, it'd be great if we got used to waking up and looking at the air quality outside and making some decisions based on that. You know, I need a raincoat and maybe I need a face mask. That's what I would recommend. If you're using the air quality index, the magic number is 101, where you might want to make some behavior changes. And what that looks like is staying indoors, closing the windows, if you have an air filter, running that air filtration system. If you do need to go outside, reducing activity, you don't want to do strenuous exercise, and then also wearing a mask. And that would be either a KN95 or a well-fit N95 mask that can prevent a lot of those particles from getting into your lungs.
That's what we do here, for sure. Now, do you know if your study would apply to people exposed to indoor smoke, like in traditional Indian cooking, or to Africans enduring smoke from burning crops and grasslands? Is it just in the wood?
short answer is I don't know about indoor smoke. We definitely didn't look at that here, and that also indoor air pollution is a very important contributor to people's overall air pollution exposure. So that is an area where we need future research. In terms of what's burning, so our study included wildfires burning a variety of things. So many of these wildfires in California are in forests, but some of the fires in our study were burning within Los Angeles County in more grassy areas or even burning buildings. And so I think for the latter question, yeah, I would expect increased risk no matter the type of outdoor wildfire that's burning. We know that prescribed burns, which are those burns that we set to try to prevent wildfires from actually happening, also emit very similar smoke to wildfires themselves, but usually at a lower level that's better contained and in the end can have some health benefits.
COVID-19 is known to increase the risk of dementia. You and your colleagues ended this study at 2019, so you avoid that compounding problem. But do you think COVID might make further study of wildfire smoke and dementia more difficult to see?
That's a tough question. I don't think it will make it more difficult. I think it'll make the way we approach the question different. And you're right, we did cut off this study at the end of 2019 to kind of save ourselves the analytic challenges of looking at 2020 and 2021. And those challenges are many. So we're using electronic health record data here. This is a secondary data source, meaning we're looking at folks' health records that are primarily kept to support them in their clinical healthcare, seeing physicians and nurses in a healthcare setting. And then we're coming in as researchers and repurposing that data to study a different question entirely. And so we know there are major changes in care seeking during the COVID-19 pandemic, at least in the United States, where people were seeing clinicians less frequently, and probably dementia diagnoses were delayed in that case. And so we'd have to think about what that means when studying the COVID period. It's also true that it's likely that people who had multiple COVID infections may have increased risk to wildfire smoke exposure. We've seen in California that wildfire smoke exposure increased the risk of dying from COVID-19. And so I think there's kind of some different pathways here that we'll have to think about carefully. We're currently extending this cohort through the end of 2023. And so we will be working on this very soon.
This is a climate emergency. Find out more on the blog, ecoshock.org. No sign up, just the latest info, free for all. ecoshock.org.
Well, Joan, let's take an excursion into one of your earlier papers. I know listeners are concerned about the grid going down during extreme weather events. For example, a 2023 study found an extended blackout during a heat wave in Phoenix, Arizona, that about half the population, 800,000 people, would need emergency medical care. And of course, that's impossible. And you worked on a 2023 paper called Spatiotemporal Distribution of Power Outages with Climate Events and Social Vulnerability in the USA. Did you find a connection between climate-driven extremes and power outages?
Yeah, and this has been well documented by others, not just us, but in the United States, 60 to 80% of power outages are co-occurring with extreme weather events. And that's exactly what we saw here. We were working with this nationwide county level, so at the sub-state level, hourly power outage data set. And we basically were able to link a whole range of weather types to these outage events and see whether they were more likely to co-occur with one another. And so when we were looking at these different weather events like extreme precipitation or heavy snow or wildfires in the case of California, we absolutely saw these increased chances of there being a power outage. And that's pretty intuitive. I think people get that, but now it's well documented in the literature. And we're actually going on to zoom in on this a little bit more and see which weather types are the riskiest and look by state in the United States and try to understand some of those questions.
And why is a power blackout of 8 hours or more considered a medical emergency?
So this is our working definition of a health-relevant power outage. We don't see from other scientists really a solid definition of this. And here's our thinking. If a power outage lasts 8 or more hours, it may move from being an inconvenience into a more life-threatening or at least health-threatening event. And that's particularly true for people that rely on electricity-dependent medical equipment. People, for example, using an oxygen concentrator in their home. And a lot of batteries will die after about 8 hours. So without backup power, people might be unable to continue using those devices. It's also possible that after about 8 hours, the temperature inside people's homes, whether this is a blackout occurring in the winter and the home gets very cold, or the summer and the home gets very hot, that's kind of the time period that we would expect some of those effects to really start taking place. But I would say this is not a sure thing, this 8 hour period, and it may differ depending on kind of the health condition you're worried about, the age group that you're worried about. And so that's an area we're continuing to work in.
And who and where are the most vulnerable people in America when the grid goes down?
A lot of people are vulnerable. I think the first thing that comes to mind, of course, are people relying on medical devices that need power, right? Because if I'm on a ventilator in my home that helps me breathe and the power goes out, I'm immediately, you know, I don't need an 8 hour power outage. I need a 10-minute power outage that things can become very bad for me. So that's the first group that comes to mind. But then, of course, the populations that we see are often susceptible to environmental exposures. Pregnant people, older adults, children, groups that have more trouble thermoregulating and keeping their temperatures stable are going to be at risk. Because we think that a lot of the health risk from power outages for people not on electricity-dependent medical equipment comes through changes in indoor temperatures and inability to, maintain a healthy temperature.
Getting back to the new research on wildfire smoke, did you find a difference between gender or race and dementia risk after wildfire exposure?
We did, in this study, find differences by gender and by individual level race and ethnicity. And so overall, we saw for that 1 microgram per meter cubed increase in 3-year average wildfire PM2.5 exposure, this 18% increase in the odds of developing dementia. For some racially minoritized groups, including Asian and Black Kaiser Permanente members, we saw about a 50% increase in the odds of developing dementia for the same level of exposure. We also saw people living in communities with higher levels of poverty were additionally at risk of developing dementia compared to the overall population. And then we also saw stronger effects in people identifying as men compared to women in this study. So for the kind of disadvantaged populations here, we think it's probably due to inability to change behaviors in the face of wildfire smoke exposure. So maybe these folks are less able to stay indoors with the windows closed, less able to afford HEPA air filtration, or may have additional underlying health conditions that already put them at greater risk. The comparison of men to women was interesting to us. And then I was talking to a sociologist at the University of Washington, and she was like, of course, that's what you saw. Because she's out in the field talking to people in communities exposed to smoke, and she said, a lot of the men just don't change their behavior. They just go about their day, whereas the women seem more concerned about this environmental insult. And we've seen that with other environmental exposures, that women are maybe more attuned to them and more willing to change behaviors in the face of environmental threats. So that may be what's going on here, that men aren't taking as many health protective behaviors in the face of wildfire smoke exposure.
Well, you've mentioned staying indoors and running HEPA filters and wearing a mask outside, a good N95 mask. Do you have any other tips for how listeners can protect their brains when wildfire smoke is around?
In the short term, I think Those are the main things that we can do. In the midterm, I think trying to talk to policymakers and get better forest management practices in place. We know that kind of a combination of tree thinning and prescribed burning can result in lower levels of wildfire exposure over the course of a year and protect health. In the longer term, we need much stronger climate policy because, as we know, the main driver of increases in wildfire smoke exposure is climate change.
Well, given the serious health impact in this and other studies, do you think the public is getting appropriate air quality warnings, and do they understand the very things that we are talking about? What are the public health steps that we need?
I think right now we're starting to see it, for example, in California, that people, the general public, is understanding the problem. And I say that because we used to see, as the level of smoke exposure went up, bad health outcomes just increased and increased and increased. But now we start to see, actually, at the highest levels of exposure, health is getting a little bit better. And why is that? Because people are changing their behavior. They're staying indoors. So medium high levels of smoke now actually are the worst for health in California, whereas the highest levels, people get the message. But we need to start having behavior change at lower levels. I would say outside California or the West Coast of the United States, people are not implementing these behavior changes as much as of yet. And like I was saying, I mean, I think we need to get used to, in this era of climate change, checking the weather and checking the air quality every morning and taking steps to protect ourselves, because as of yet, we don't have the nationwide or state-level policies in place that are going to protect us.
Joan, what will you be working on next?
Next big step for me is thinking about co-occurring hazards with incident dementia and exacerbation of adverse health outcomes. So we're not just seeing increases in wildfires, right? We're seeing more heat waves. We're seeing more power outages, like we were talking about. And our group wants to understand, what's it mean when all of those things happen together for health? It's going to likely be much worse if a wildfire hits in the midst of a heat wave and then there's no air conditioning because the power's gone out. That seems like it's going to result in much worse health outcomes. But we haven't seen a lot of studies tackling that problem yet, so that's the next big step for us.
From the University of Washington, we've been speaking with epidemiologist Dr. Joan Casey. You can find links to learn more in my show blog at ecoshock.org. I always add some useful notes and links there. Joan, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. That's it for this week. We're out of time. People need real science from the scientists direct. Please tell others about this program. Radio EcoShock is now on Blue Sky. Find us and follow to get a weekly show announcement and spread the word there. Thank you for listening, helping, and caring about our world.